As you know, we are fortunate to have the artist Joyce Pensado back with us tonight. She was here in November when her work was featured in this season's first Focus exhibition, Focus Joyce Pensado, that ran November 21st through January 31st and was curated by the Moderns curator Allison Hurst. It is a show not easily forgotten or dismissed, with Joyce's large, enthusiastically painted and dramatic images borrowed from pop culture and adapted to reveal their psychological edge. There were also photographs or collages that grew out of Joyce's painting process and the realities of her studio, my personal favorite being what she called her self-portrait, which is a photograph of Gina Rollins from the 1980s film Gloria. It's a very powerful image, and I think it does reflect who I know Joyce to be. Based in Brooklyn, Joyce Pensado attended the New York Studio School, where she studied under and met important art world figures who have influenced and supported her through a career that took off at about that time in the mid-1970s. Art writer John Yao has explained that the studio school is known for instructors teaching a Giacometti-like, anxiety-ridden search for the mark, brimming with feeling, as well as advocating that students draw in paint, stating that Pensado is one of the few artists who didn't find it necessary to reject this education to gain her authority. If anything, she made it into something all her own, which is a strong indication of how willful and single-minded, which is meant to be a compliment, she is. Which takes me back to that self-portrait. Joyce has shown her unique synthesis of abstract expressionism's unbridled energy and pop art's celebration of the vernacular, works that humor and challenge us in exhibitions across the globe, including her 2013 solo exhibition at Santa Monica Museum of Art that then traveled to the Contemporary Art Museum in St. Louis. She is represented by Petzl Gallery in New York and many noteworthy institutions, including MoMA and the Whitney in New York, the Hammer in L.A., and the Pompidou in Paris have collected and thus shown their attraction and faith in her work. Tonight, Joyce is here to give us a personal look at her life and career, sharing important influences from the art world and pop culture while showing us the work that she makes with what seems to be pure abandon and conviction. Please join me in welcoming Joyce Pensado.
Hi, everybody. I'm going to take this, and we'll start with my... When I was growing up in the 40s and 50s, my dad was an immigrant and loved New York, loved America, and so he would... he would take us to 42nd Street and the Macy's. So that's kind of what I remembered, images of big signs and Macy's Thanksgiving parade. And this is I wasn't around then when that picture was taken. But I liked the image. And so my father was my first mentor. And that's my dad, and a bad picture of me. Oh, it's right here, okay. And this is Mercy's Matter, who was my first mentor at the studio school. And, you know, we all did drawings like Giacometti or Cezanne, and we all and kind of painted like de Kooning. And this is one of her drawings. Became like the charcoal queen. And this is my good friend, Christopher, lifelong friend, Christopher Vowell, who, I met him when he was 18 years old, and he became my best friend, oldest friend. And this is Ira Will, Chris's dad, who was like my godfather. And, these are early when I was a student at the studio school, I found what I was about. And it was about pop culture and, you know, Mickey Mouse's Donald Duck, Batman, and putting it, the space is like a still life space. And this is still, you know, 78, I would say. And then I met Joan Mitchell in 1980. And she is really sweet, funny story, because she's a tough broad. She was a really tough bitch. And she would say, what do you want to be, one of those German expressionist paintings or one of the French light and air and color? And I said, no, Joan, I want to be one of the French paintings. But I realized I was a German expressionist painting. So and this is one of her paintings from the 80s when I was there, would visit her. And so Joan is my second mentor, made me realize who I was, that I wasn't French and I wasn't of that color. And so this is an early glove drawing. After the studio school, I started working on found objects, and one of them was a glove. And so it feels like a Matisse figure to me, like a reclining nude or something. My dog, Max. And this is the old studio where I moved into, in 1970, they threw me out of the studio school after 6 years at the dead of summer, and I had to get a studio, and I went to Williamsburg, which hardly anybody was going there at that time, and found this incredible studio that I could fill it up with much stuff, and I was there for about 30 years filling it up. And this is part of the studio. That's me looking, thinking of myself as Giacometti figure or something. I don't know what I was. And this is how, you know, when I would work, everything got covered. And at, you know, 30 years of bringing in stuff to the space. It was more than a studio. It's like a ballroom or so. Two stories. And this is the Lisa drawing. I love, as I get shorter and older, the work is getting very large. And I'm into cherry pickers right now. And so late 80s, I was supposed to have a show of these abstract paintings, and the paintings really looked bad. It looked like everybody else's bad abstract paintings. But I always did drawings, and they were always, it was like I was very divided artist. The drawings were like cartoony and, you know, figurative, and then there was this other part of abstract painting. And I was so shocked by when they, the show was dismissed, and it made me realize what I was about, and why try to be something in color and doing, you know, normal kind of painting? Why not accept who I was in black and white? And I asked my friend Chris Will about the paint he used, and it was enamel paint, and it was like giving me new life into my work. Because I didn't know how to screw it up, but just to play with it. And so this is one of the early Batmans from early, I would say early 90s or late 80s, on paper. And this is a large drawing from early, I would say 98, late. And it's Donald as a cross-dresser, and he's horrified because he's coming out of the wall with a dress on. And another major thing happened in to me was meeting Petzl, Friedrich Petzl. And it sort of, what every artist dreams about is, you know, having a platform to show your work and make a couple of dollars, not borrow from the family and pay your bills and all that and have supplies. So, and this is the first show at Petzl. So all the, that's South Park guys and Felix and Homer and another South Park guy. And super clean in that gallery. And then I had a drawing show same year with Lisa and actually that's Mickey on the left. I love this combination. So I started to like be Frankenstein and mix up parts that I liked. Like I would like sometimes that this is Felix with Donald's expression and put different parts of the cartoons together just to throw things off. And this is the show at 2012 at Petzl. I had to move out of the studio after 32 years, so I brought it all into the gallery. And it was such a great experience to do. I always wanted to junk up a Chelsea gallery, and I got my dream came through. And I was a little crazy. I cut out the floor, part of the floor and wall, and brought it into the gallery. And actually, Petzl, the first thing he sold was the floor and wall. So, and I love those Elmos. And this is part of this is in the gallery. So I started last maybe 10 years is doing installation work, and so this is Daisy is I'm preparing for the Santa Monica show, and so we did a wall, like a drawing first to project it. And there's the start of it in Santa Monica. I mean, it's so great to get the opportunity to, you know, to do it on these big, great walls. And that's just a portrait of me. I loved L.A., so I think I was drinking too much green juice there. And this is, so they had some of our work from the 90s in along with recent work there. And that's a big Mickey Mouse. I think it's from 27 or 8. And the black enamels I did early 90s was part French. And as, you know, Terry was saying, I think of... Who doesn't want to be a tall blonde with a gun? That's me. So I think of that as a very feminist presence. You know, somebody in control and who could take care of stuff and who's attractive looking. You don't want to be an ugly person with a gun. And I think of... One of my heroes was is Robert De Niro, and from the 70s and 80s, and he's like cool and hot, and but I think of him as the raging bull when he was like come on, give it to me more, beat me up, I could take it. So those two images of Gina Rollins and De Niro from Raging Bull. And I have stuff around my my studio, and there'd be photographs, collages, and of course the paint was splattering all over the place. And I found I had an old calendar of presidents, and I saw this image of Lincoln, and Lincoln. I mean, so iconic and so incredibly strong, and he's looking at the viewer. So, and the splashes, it just felt so right. So I got into Lincoln, And so I put them around, and the paint would fall all over the place. So I started taking photographs of, I mean, this is part of my studio, you know, having images of De Niro in Raging Bull and other stuff. And this paint, to me, is like part of my process. And this is Santa Monica. The show went to St. Louis, and so I did a wall painting of running Mickey's there. And he started off with legs, and by the time 2 weeks later, he had no legs but a big, giant belly. Because there's a lot of donuts and bacon there. And it was so great to have that space to do it. And this is some images. And it pays to be short with these photographs because it looks like a real big thing I'm doing. This is a big Homer. I love Homer. And this was done for Listen Gallery in London. And there's gold. I think I was there for about 10 days. And it's a buildup of paint. So it would be gold, silver, and it wound up silver, actually, a silver Batman. And I wanted to keep all that paper on the floor, but they talked me out of it for the exhibition. And this is one of the most stupidest things I ever did was to do a charcoal drawing, a big giant one with the erasers and little charcoal. That for 10 days, but this is in Rome. And this is at the Rose Museum. I did some eyeballs, and they didn't give me enough space to back up. You'll see. So I had to go, you know, you had to go outside to see what I was doing. I made a big mess there. It was like... But every time I had to go down the stairs, go around the window just to see what I was doing. And there's just a couple of drawings, and that's Felix and Donald combined. And this is in my studio that I'm moving out of. So I like to have large drawings going on to, you know, get me going. And there's Groucho Marx, who I love too. The mustache guy. And so I have like all these toys surrounding me to inspire me. And I have to look at something. And there's Charlie the dog with his Elmos. But sometimes, you know, some of these things, like South Park, I had around for a good 10 years before I started working with it. It felt, when I first got South Park Eyes, it always felt so simple. And then 10 years later, I said, wow, that's going to work. So it's a big mess there. That's how I love to work. And this is what I would look at to the left. So I was working on Batman, so I have a couple of Batmans there. And so it's really close by. And this is the last show at PESL last year. And I just love how the guys, it looks like a dance, how they're putting it up. The lineup. And it looks so different when it goes out of my studio because everything's kind of looking as one in the studio. some characters I invented. The guy with the mustache, I call him the juicer, and he's just a combination of stuff. And here's the photographs that I would have on the wall, collage, you know, paint drippings, and I would I would take photos of them, and they were here in the Focus show. I think that might be from the Focus show too. This is in Berlin last fall. This Berlin, and it's a black Batman. You guys have the white Batman. This is Berlin again. And here we go, the eyeballs. I had such a great time here. It was so cool. And I thought it looked great, Gloria and Batman together. And there's my Sherry and my assistant, Elizabeth the Cucumber, with Butt Charlie, who loves, adores her. And that's one of my... So since... when I was a kid, I loved Hollywood, I loved movies, I loved TV, and now I'm getting the opportunity to do what I like to do is play characters for photography stuff, and I got the opportunity to actually do my own ads, you know, create my own ads for my shows. Oh, that's a little... So I think of myself as the godmother, you know, like Biggie Ange or somebody. Oh, another. And this is the cucumber in me. It looks a little like Demo and Louise. So we do photo shoots as we work together, and it passes the time too. I don't know who that guy is sitting on top of the car. And there's Elizabeth. One summer, dyes her hair black, because she's a blonde actually. But I liked how she looks like some character here. And that's Paul McCarthy. I feel connected to Paul and his work. When I was in a show. First time I met him was '92, and it was a three-person show at Laurie and Augustine. And they said, this is before he became Paul McCarthy. And they said, oh, you want to meet Paul? And I thought, oh, my God. He had a bunch of toys in the milk crate. And I thought, did he go to my studio and steal my toys? So I felt a real connection to Paul and his early work. And this is the ad I made a couple of years ago. So I had, the last couple of shows... was like all artsy fartsy, you know, in the studio with the paint and the artsy fartsy photograph. And so I thought, wouldn't it be funny to have the ad as LA sitting by the pool sign, the opposite of what you might, how you think of me. And so, and I'm also into Absolutely Fabulous, those girls, the Patsy and Eddie. And Married to the Mob, too. So the combination of, it started like a simple idea by the poolside with a glass of champagne or something, and Elizabeth and I doing Absolutely Fabulous. And then it became like, wow, wouldn't it be great to get a lookalike of George Clooney? And before you know, it was George Clooney, then Lassie the dog. And then I discovered this guy, Lenny, who's on the beach in Santa Monica. And he's incredible. And so this is our photo shoot for the advertisement. So in my old age, I'm having a good time. And that's me recently. So now photos are part of my work. Or incorporating having fun and playing. And I got to meet my hero, Bob De Niro, a couple of years ago because I got this award from Bob. And he's not the guy, the 30-year-old guy, but who is anymore? He's a little bow-legged, a little, you know. He looks like my Uncle Tony now. So, but every year I get to see him. And I think next is the... And this is the ad for Berlin. Later is thou. And now, do I push? Oh. So that I wanted to end it with that, and then I'll take any questions you have. So I'm looking forward to the next couple of shows to, I don't know, get wild and crazy. Yes.
How is it that you accumulated so many toys and stuff?
How did you accumulate so many many toys?
Oh, my God. Well, the story goes... Wait, I'll get here. Yeah. When I was a little girl, my mom would go crazy every once in a while, and she threw out my toys. I don't know what happened. Anyway, I always had an eye for it and would rescue them. The old days, they would throw it out in the streets and you could pick it up. Now it's all on eBay. So right now, I'm trying to filter some of them. I don't pick so much stuff up now. But if I connect to it, no, I connect to the old, like Mickey Mouse's and Felix the Cat and South Park and Simpsons. But nothing, you know, I don't know what's going on now, but, you know, I have to connect to them somehow. But that's what happens when you're always got your eye on stuff, and then friends would give you stuff too, so.
So that explains the multiples, like the...
Yes. Well, because... You know, I have a lot of Eric Cartman and all those guys. Yeah. So, and sometimes they give you something else, and sometimes they get all covered with paint and I can't see anything.
But you use those toys to then inspire the paintings,
yes.
Is that right? Okay.
I mean, they're my models.
Right. Oh, that's great.
So, I have nothing in me. So I always had Batman, you know, I was looking for Batman mask and stuff like that. Then they become an object full of paint and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yes?
Ellsworth Kelly told me once that if you do an exhibition, just put friends
in the exhibition.
His good what?
Friends. Right. Because, and it's interesting because I know you've been friends with Christopher for a really long time. But also, just how your work relates to Christopher, the way he does his gestures and surface.
Right.
And I was just asking about that.
Yeah, I mean, mine is all hands-on, and his is very, there's an elegance to it. But we discussed, Chris and I discussed it, we are both black and white people. And it's like, you know, it's very graphic in a way. And he has helped me, you know, with the enamel paint, that was like a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. Because it was exactly what I wanted. I wanted it to look fresh, like I just did it, and it was about gestural. And that it gave me the opportunity to do that. Yeah, I hope. Did I answer you?
Yes, and also, well, then also talk about Joan Mitchell and your work.
She's very difficult when I was dealing with her, because she was very tough. So all I heard was her voice, and I didn't quite see her work. I can't believe it. I couldn't appreciate her work at the time. And I think I remember, I can't believe I said that. I don't get her work.
And you told her that?
I didn't feel for her work. I think I told her that. Oh, yeah, they. and she said, that's okay, I like you and your work and whatever. She was a mature person at that point. But I actually got to appreciate her work 10 years later, after she died, that I could actually see it without her voice coming in my head. So what she gave me too was at times talking about the light of flowers together. And she said, see, that's what I'm talking about, light. And just to be forceful when you're working and painting. Because I'm a little timid in front of her. Go, go.
Can't believe it. Right now. Yeah. She should see you now.
So she was a tough girl. And I could appreciate it now, after so many years. Yes.
Do you find that people project things onto your work?
Yes.
I find myself doing that
with
your work.
But that's okay. You project... A lot of, I actually love all these characters and what I'm doing. Okay. I'm not making a critical statement about them, but the viewer may see that in my work. But I kind of like these guys. And they sometimes come out angry or disturbing or creepy, but it's a love there. I don't see it as a critical statement, but I know the viewer does that too. And that's how they see it. That's okay.
Do you think that's part of the success of the work, that it must feel open to that?
I never analyzed the success. The only thing it connects to some childhood is like we all know these characters. And to me, I love them. They're familiar. And I like to play with them. I'm going by how I feel. Maybe the audience feels the same way. It connects to something in our past, and just keeping it. I try to play with it with color, and it always went wrong. So I'm trying to keep it very graphic and black and white. Maybe one day I introduce these subcolor, just touches of it. Mm-hmm. But I know I'm not very. I want it to be strong.
I think the fact that you love the characters or the subjects that you paint is evident. It's almost like the way you apply the paint is like you're holding their face, or you know, you take the faces go all the way to the edge of the page. It's almost like you have your hands. I mean, there's something affectionate, even as aggressive as the marks are.
Yeah, I realized. As I was working, it would be part figure. And then I was always drawn to the head. And so I thought, why not just do that fucking head? No, forget about the body. That's what you're drawn to, or just go to the eyes.
Uh-huh.
And because it shows in this work, if you're not into it, so you have to really embrace it and love it and own it. That's how I feel. All these characters, they may look like Mickey Mouse, but I want to make it my own. I want to own it how I see it. I hope that's clear.
Yeah.
And make it my own, even though they're familiar.
Yeah, that comes across.
Yeah.
It does for sure.
Yes.
In part of the video, I noticed when you were working on Daisy, there were two posters of Lynn Fultz.
Oh, I know. I was trying to get paint on it, and I left it up there. And I thought, I should have taken that down. I was going to use those posters to have drippings on it. But his show was up when I was there, so I thought to put it up.
Is he an artist you connect with? Or?
No, I saw his show. I'm not that crazy about him, but I would want to do something with the posters, but it didn't happen. So they should, just to have it there.
The first.
Yes.
Go ahead. I probably shouldn't be asking you questions, so I'd ask you a bunch of them. And Terry did a great job introducing you, but there was one part is that your career did not take off.
No.
Oh, and I just want to talk about what a struggle. The only thing I knew about you was always people I loved and respected, artists, would tell me about your work.
Right.
And you have to, and you had this long, so what was it like to just keep doing work, and then now your career, you're getting the recognition you deserve,
but you're
not one of these young, emerging, but you are.
A couple of years ago, Sir Norman Rosenthal said, where were you in the 1980s when I was meeting all these guys? And I was just trying to exist. And I was happy doing, working, and then I decided to maybe stop working and try to have a career. It took a little longer than I thought. But I was happy to do whatever I was doing. I was talking this about earlier. I would have been, if I'm really lucky, knock on wood, not many artists, older artists, get this opportunity that I have right now, that I could show different places. I could be on a cherry picker, and I can actually pay for it to throw paint on the walls and everything. And I would have done this, keep it going, without having any success. I would have, found ways to borrow off whatever family members were still around and get it going, or however it was going. I'm just in a great place right now, and that I have the opportunity to do whatever. But it took a while. It took actually, my career was sort of late 80s, early 90s, a little bit being, I was always called the artist, and that means you're a loser. Nobody else wants you except the other artists. And I thought, I'm getting sick of being called an artist. I think it was Jerry Saltz who wrote on something like, oh, these guys are... And I remember telling my friend Mike Ballou, I said, because they mentioned that we were artists, I said, I had it with being an artist, and I'm going to do something about it. And I think what happened was I had a great show in Brooklyn at this gallery, Parker's Box. And it could have been in Chelsea, but I could only get like five friends to come on a weekend to see it. It was, somebody wrote on it, Art in America, and that's Pestle finally saw this article. And I, at that point, I was like one of these whiny artists complaining about the deal that they couldn't do anything. Nothing is happening, and I hated myself for feeling that way. I said, who is the most powerful people I know? I'm going to beg them. And it was, I asked I thought Crystal and Charlene. And I said, if they could, you know, I'm ready now after so many years. And so I remember calling Charlene and for my summer studio visit. And she said, it's really weird, but Petzl wants to come over to see your studio. I don't know what for, but and that's it was because we met before I knew he'd do my work. He said he came like in the early 90s, and all he came from Germany, and all he could remember was these Mickey Mouse drawings, and he wasn't ready to deal with that. So it took him a little while to see my work, actually. And it was timing. And so I didn't have to beg Chris to, but you know. I was ready, but it took me psychologically a while to feel that I was really ready to be out there. I wasn't ready in the 80s or 90s. I mean, I tried a little here and there. I experimented. I showed in France a lot. So that was, but the recognition came since Petzl, I would say, since 2006.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Well, you know, being an artist is about having integrity, right?
Yeah. Forget about that integrity. But it's all, you know, right now it's like whatever dream I may have, like doing these crazy photo things, I could do now, and people actually, they actually advertise an art form with them. So that's really cool. So I have plans for the summer. I want to do another photo. I had such a great time in doing that photo shoot with the fake George Clooney and Lenny, who's terrific, and absolutely fabulous, you know, Patsy and Eddie and the Marriage of the Mob thing. So my next idea, I hope to do it in fall, is that Billy Marks 80s, 80s, 70s, New York, gringy, and get a fake De Niro to come in the bar. We'll get you guys, too. And ours is the new black, too. Yes?
I love your work. I'm wondering if the owners of the copyrights or patents Mickey Mouse or Daisy.
I never got in trouble for that. I actually spoke to Paul McCarthy, who actually, his Pinocchio stuff was pretty much out of Disney. He never got in trouble. Mine changes, I think. If you were to take, I think, exact what they were doing, the other artists got in trouble for that.
So you never faced any challenges?
Never. I'm still waiting for them. Yeah. The one time, actually, Paris Review was going to put it on the cover of Mickey Mouse. And the owner of the book felt a little, you know, they didn't want to do it on the cover. And they put it in the middle of the book, call it Four Mice. They didn't want to call it Mickey. That's the closest thing that sometimes got you. But I never, and I think Paul McCarthy never got in trouble too.
Can I, yes. You know, with the images of your studio?
Yes.
So originally, that was the byproduct of you being in that space and making it your own, like putting up images, and they would get paint on them as a part of the process of painting.
Everywhere got painted, and just full of whatever is going on.
So what, because when I look at that photograph of Gina Rollins,
yes.
And I see the duct tape.
Yeah, because she's on my door with the duct tape.
But the duct tape looks really important.
I know. How did that happen?
Okay.
I got a camera, a bigger camera. And so the printer told me how to make it all line up.
Uh-huh.
So that's how it happened. I can't believe it myself. It looks pretty good.
But you know, I appreciate the fact that you are relying so much on kind of this internal, the subconscious just working as it, responsively. But do you ever stop and recognize these things that attract you? Like,
no, I started to, because a lot of I have a thing for Black culture, and found photographs of Black families, and I incorporated it sometimes in a drawing to get me going, and I haven't quite figured that one out. It's a love, I know, of it. But, and then I thought, is it my Sicilian roots that something is going on there? Why I'm zooming in onto the Black culture? You know, when I was a kid, I always thought I wanted to be Irish because I thought that was really American. Then I wanted to be Jewish because they were cultural and all that. I never wanted to be Italian except for recently with the Tony Soprano. But, but then I wanted to be Black. You know, the last couple of years that we had. Oprah and Obama.
Well, race is something that people project on your work.
Yes,
right?
I know.
Yeah.
It's the beginning of the eyes and the mouth. It's a way, it's sort of me entering it. But I haven't analyzed it where, I know John Yao was projecting, was saying that, but that's coming from John Yao, how he's just seeing.
Right, that he's projecting that on it,
I'm aware. Because I use the, you know, it gets me going, whatever working. But I haven't deeply felt, analyzed it. So I'm keeping, well, something is there, I know, but maybe one day I'll get to it or feel it. But I am attracted to that.
And the way you work exaggerates everything.
Yeah.
So anything that you're capturing in race is a stereotype versus the reality.
When I was doing Homer on Fifth Street on a wall, and I think I put his mouth, I didn't think it would look anything racist, but it was kind of a big mouth. And the, oh my God, this Black woman from the neighborhood watch, she gave me the dirtiest look, like, what is going on there? What are you doing? But I, you know, I thought, maybe she doesn't know Homer. It's Homer with the big eyes. But I am aware of that. And, but it gets me, inspires me, it does something, and I just keep doing it until
You're just following it.
Go to the shrink for another 25 minutes. So, is there more? And I love being, you know, yes.
I'm just wondering about, especially about some of your female subjects, like from Daisy all the way to what you said was like your self-portrait of Thelma and Louise to Gina Rollins.
Oh.
It seems like there's a real powerful...
I would like to be a powerful woman. I mean, I think of my inner self wanting to be. I don't want to be a short American Sicilian woman getting shorter. I want to, you know, be tough. So, yeah, I would like to be tough, but I know I don't think I'm that tough.
No. You seem tough.
I seem tough.
You
thank
do.
You.
I witness.
You know, as I get older, I feel I could be myself, so this is what's good. And say whatever I want and do
well,
whatever.
Well, would you say it was tough, or are you just more like a feminist, right? Just more
I didn't hear that.
Are you more like a feminist, or is it tough?
No. I mean, I'm supportive of all the women issues, thank you. But I'm not, I don't know where I was in the 80s and 70s. I was sort of conked out, but I believe in my, you know, feminine issues, but I'm not politically, I hate to say, I'm not that politically involved.
Because I see Lisa Simpson as the first feminist cartoon character, right?
Yeah, but as if I do not watch cartoons. I like to look at them, but I have a hard time watching cartoons.
So you don't care about the narrative?
No.
Okay.
I just like how they look. I'm working on Beavis and Buttheads, but yeah, I want to make a high art out of low art, kind of up them. But I don't watch cartoons, even though I do like South Park. I think is really good.
You know, maybe this could be the last question, unless somebody else has one. But I'm wondering about the, because again, I could be projecting, but I see a kind of embrace of the pathetic in the subjects that you choose. There's something of the pathetic, you know, like Homer Simpson. He's not admirable. He's lovable, but he's not admirable, you know.
Yeah.
And you, in the idea even of Frankensteining all of them together is kind of, in a way, you're creating these lovable monsters.
Yeah. Well, I know Homer. I actually haven't really changed Homer. He's just, and he's. The more I kind of live with Homer, I love his bald head, and big eyes, and you know, his expression. And I don't read into much of. I can see Homer is very sympathetic, sometimes very kind of human touch.
Yeah.
The Mickey Mouse is Donald Duck. I change parts of. I put like Donald. I'll put sometimes Mickey's ears on him because I like the ears of something. But I love Donald Duck because he's so expressive. I could make him do a lot of express. No, I'm still into Donald.
Yeah.
Not the Donald Trump thing.
Yeah.
More?
You've taken us to the hour. Thank you so much.
I hope.